Welcome to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFBA. Over the next hour, you'll be introduced to business and local leaders impacting our community. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio at 540-371-5756. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
It is the Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park in this morning. Beth Parnitza and Pete Mogul here with us this morning. Good morning. Good to have you here. It's been a busy month for you guys.
It has been.
And still much to come, and that's what we're gonna get into this morning. But really, up until now, in everything is we still, I guess, as far as the calendar goes. The Overland campaign and Battle of Wilderness took place, and now I guess as far as the date and around this time, Battle of Spotsylvania Courthouse is still going on.
Yeah, you know, and I think Spotsylvania is that great example of how we see the war starting to shift, right? Where instead of having a couple days worth of battles and then moving on, that in fact sometimes the battles can start to stretch on and on, and Spotsylvania lasts for, you know, 2 weeks or so of fighting. And some of it's, you know, that kind of constant contact between the armies, and sometimes it's a sharp battle, and sometimes it's just the lines kind of staring at each other in the rain. But yeah, our final 160th program is going to be with Pete as kind of a wrap-up on Saturday, so with one of the final assaults at Spotsylvania.
So talk about it, because Pete, so much is made, and we know so much about the bloody angle, and that was just horrific, and went on for like a day and a half of just really intense, you know, hand-to-hand combat in everything. But like Beth said, we don't hear a lot, but you know, we're almost a week later, and still the armies are in Spotsylvania.
Yeah, sure. And that gets, I think, confusing for folks what happened and all. There's a lot of rain after the Bloody Angle attacks on May 12th and a lot of shifting of the armies. Grant does what Lee thought he was going to do on the night of May 11th, which is start moving south east. And then Lee's army's kind of moving to shadow that. And then they get all the way up to like May 17th, which the Union army's going to they plan a large-scale assault down closer towards like Massaponics area, and some of the Union generals in that sector feel that it's not a good idea. They've sent forth a reconnaissance. They feel that the Confederates' positions are too strong, so they propose that if the Confederates are strong on their right or on their southeast flank, then maybe they've weakened all the way back to their left flank, back close to where the Mule Shoe and the Bloody Angle was. So Grant takes the advice of his subordinates and says, hey, let's double back. We're going to try to attack them where we did before, except this time, you know, the Federals have possession of the Mule Shoe because eventually they did capture it, and they're going to begin their attacks from there. That leads to some very difficult experiences as these Union soldiers have to march through the Mule Shoe area, which, after all that heavy combat you just mentioned, has a lot of casualties that have been out in the open for almost a week. The rain, the mud. So they begin their attack in that, and then they have to go against Confederate defensive positions, which are actually not weakened at all. They've just been strengthened for the last week, and the Union attacks get bogged down to the point. I don't even know that I've really seen anything like this before, where the Union attacks, they get stuck in a lot of Confederate defenses. They call it abattis. It's a lot of tree branches and all, and they can't even advance beyond that. They just get stuck in this brush kind of barriers and get bogged down. But the Union generals won't allow them to pull back, so they're there for hours. So that happened on May 18th. That's what we'll talk about on this Saturday evening at 6:30. You can meet at the Bloody Angle, and we'll walk about a grand total of probably a little under 2 miles and lay that story out. It's also very indicative of how Grant played out this campaign, where he felt, you know, he's going to try every opportunity he can, but then after the failed attacks on May 18th is when Grant decides that the army's going to move on. Spotsylvania Courthouse is not going to be the place where they're going to be able to, you know, destroy the Army of Northern Virginia. But yeah, a lot of times we don't hear anything about that. We hear about the Mule Shoe and the Bloody Angle on May 12th, and then eventually the armies, you know, go south to North Anna, et cetera. But there's a lot to the story in between those points.
how difficult it was, it psychologically, because you bring a good point where you still got bodies there, and they've done a lot of fighting, whether it was at Wilderness and Wilderness, all the things that they saw at Wilderness, and obviously lost friends or acquaintances, and then you have the bloody angle, and you're still fighting. I would think just psychologically, it would be hard for soldiers on both sides to be able to continue to go on.
Sure. I mean, so Beth and I did an iteration of this program some years ago. And of course, there's like what the soldiers are writing in their diaries and everything. And then just some of the descriptions of what they went through, especially on the May 18th attack, where they're marching over the bodies of other Union soldiers and all this. And like, we were debating some of these quotes and we're like, is this something we even want to like repeat or say? And not that we want to ever candy coat things, but it's some of them are really, you know, rough to read.
I was going to say, yeah, it would be. I mean, I'm sure sometimes it's just graphic or just really difficult because, you know, it's friends and maybe people from your hometown or just the things that you have seen. Mm-hmm. We see it with any war.
Oh yeah, and I mean I remember like those quotes were scarring in themselves. I mean, and just trying to put yourself in the shoes of somebody who, yeah, has seen this horrific fighting, and then, you know, like Pete's describing, that you're ordered to go forward and your march or your attack has to, like, you're walking on people and their remains as you're trying to move forward. And, you know, there's no way, right, like if you think about the way that an attack goes forward, it's not like you can just kind of carefully pick your way around things. Like, they're talking about stepping in and on people, and it's horrifying, I mean, to think about. And, you know, whether they're your friends or even the bodies of your enemies, like, you're
right,
you know, they're still people. And just the thought of, yeah, we talk a lot again about the emotional and mental toll, and actually Pete and John gave a whole program on that 2 weekends ago, but you know, it just persists. It's not isolated to any one experience. I mean, we can say that the Bloody Angle was particularly bad, and it was, but then you sort of see these different aspects where each of them has their own kind of special horrifying element to it, and how that must have taken just, like, how could you forget having done that, and how can you go to sleep at night thinking about those experiences and just the psychological toll, in addition to the physical toll of all the sort of exhaustion that results in this kind of fighting.
Yeah, no, just the exhaustion of where you because you keep going, and like you say, that after this last skirmish, then the decision is made, we're just going to keep going south, and it continues on.
Right, you know, and I'm certainly not a psychologist, but I know that when talking about trauma, that there is a difference between sort of an isolated quick trauma and then more of a complex trauma, something that kind of builds and keeps happening. And I think we have to look at the Overland campaign as absolutely an example of that kind of complex trauma, where things just, you know, it's not just one isolated incident. It's something that is part of your life for however many months this lasts.
Yeah.
And how that takes a greater and different toll on these soldiers and really anybody who witnessed it.
And you just think of the families too, who are either getting these letters or who are wondering what happened.
Oh yeah.
What happened to my relative?
Yeah, you know, and even just these accounts that are written, you know, some of them are in diaries or some of them are for newspapers, but some of them are literally writing home. And can you imagine, like, your brother writing to you about walking over dead bodies to attack, and
yeah,
that you're just lucky to be alive and all the horrors that you've seen, and, you know, it feels incomprehensible, and at the same time, it's one of those, it's a story that, among so many other stories, that we have to find ways to navigate and understand.
Yeah. Beth Parnitza here, Pete Mogul here from the Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park. Quick break. We'll be back on News Talk 1230 WFE.
Welcome back to Town Talk on News Talk 1230. You can weigh in about today's topic on Facebook at WFVA 1230 and by text at 540-371-5756. Here's your host, Ted Schubel.
The Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park here this morning. Pete Mogul and Beth Parnitza here, and we've got much to talk about. The Luminaria is coming up, and we'll get to that shortly, and just a number of things. Just a quick, we were saying, I mean, the last few weeks have been real busy for all of you as you put things together, and really good. I mean, we are so fortunate to have the Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park and the programs, especially when you get to a weekend. When you get to the Overland Campaign and you get to Battle of Wilderness and in Spotsylvania Courthouse, you make it all so we see it all in books and we look at pictures. But you get there out on the field, and whether it's the day or the day close to a day, it just comes alive for you all as people that study this. It's got to be fun to put some of these programs together, even though as you said, Pete. You know, some of these programs, reading the diaries, are pretty intense stuff.
Sure, yeah. But no, it is. It's a time when we make ourselves kind of revisit, I think, material and try to come up with some new things. And I think that our park this time around, maybe different than the 150th to some degree, we wanted to go about things differently too. So in addition to having your, you know, standard battle walks and tours, you know, we had what we called some pop-up programs, which lend themselves to interaction and, you know, some dialogue where visitors actually have to like kind of do some of their own work thinking about things. And then also we kind of, you know, went for some topics that in the past, you know, are hard to address, mm-hmm. like we said, like, you know, how this affects people in bad ways. And then, like you were saying, we talked about the hospitals, which is something that people just either don't think about or don't want to think about because it's not the most pleasant topic. But those are things that resulted from these battles as well. So I think that was nice, the breadth of stuff. And then you were talking with us before, too, about how, you know, before we dive into the battle itself, let's make sure I understand what's driving this. So we focused on the election of 1864 that was going on. And it was funny because I think we had a lot of visitors who come to a lot of these programs traditionally, came to our 150th programs. And then after they had, like, you know, interacted with one of our pop-up programs or got a program that was a different, like, version of the Bloody Angle, and they'd be like, I never thought of it that way, or this was actually really kind of cool. Like, and, you know, maybe some skepticism at first, like, this isn't what we usually get. But then after actually doing mm-hmm. it was like, this is really great. It kind of got me to a place where I can better, you know, fathom things or look at it differently. So, yeah. So it's nice for us because we can take, you know, something that we might have studied for, you know, decades and now, like, put a different, like, spin on it, right?
Well, it's always interesting with your programs to be able to view the topography and to see how things and again on Saturday at the Bloody Angle, so often the topography you're surprised at how all of a sudden there's just these spots where you just suddenly can't see one another. But on Saturday was Frank O'Reilly pointed out that there are parts of the Spotsylvania on the topography you can't see, but it's not nearly as it seems steep, and you look at situations, you think, wow, this is gonna, you know, this is gonna be really difficult, but it's not as it seems. So it's just it's so insightful to be out on these fields, which you're glad that the Park Service and others have been able to preserve some of these fields to be able to have some of these programs, and it really is worth getting out in walking these battlefields. You get a whole different view of the battle.
Yeah, and I think we're really lucky in that we have these resources to share with people, because yeah, whether you're interested in the topography or whether you are just more of a not sitting down and reading kind of person, but mm-hmm. a getting up and walking kind of person, or, you know, participating in some of the activities like Pete was talking about, you know, I think it is often seen as like a more active way of learning. And so, you know, we are also continuously looking for like what's going to be relevant to somebody's life. What is going to be something that they can apply in their own day-to-day lives, or things, you know, skills that they can develop when they're analyzing pieces of history. And, these are things that are exciting to us. And so how can we, you know, help to share these sort of skills or this way of analysis, whether it is, you know, looking at the landscape and how do you find these clues to what used to be here or how this was experienced, or whether it is, you know, yeah, let's frame out how the election of 1864 actually matters to what's happening on the ground here and the experience of these soldiers in these particular trenches. And I think there's just a lot to be said, you know, as I talk, with Pete here as like our education coordinator, but actually getting kids, families, adults, people actually out on the ground walking around. You know, it's an active learning space, and it's, you know, I know that history teachers in the classroom do their absolute best to bring things to life and to make things engaging, but I think there's an element that we have that's just very lucky that the landscape helps to do a lot of the work for us to help bring these stories to life and make them seem very real to people.
Well, and you all do such a good job of using the sort, using letters and diaries and things like that to build a story. And it's just so much more than you get in a book or that you learned in school.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's nothing like actually taking the words of participants or people who are reflecting on the situation, right? Because those, you know, whether it's that or like a glimpse of archaeology or some kind of artifact that was there, I mean, these are different ways of actually sort of speaking directly to the past. And it's a way to make those connections of how were these people actually feeling? How did they really experience these events? And it can be a good check on, you know, we talk about history as being a collection of different narratives, and every narrative is going to view things from a different perspective. And so we can look at these original documents or these artifacts, and we can kind of place those into that context. But it helps to kind of cut through whatever narratives you may have learned in your life or heard or, you know, read on the internet, hopefully in a good way, but you never know, right? And gets to that reality. Like, you can't deny the actual documents of what somebody said. And you can compare that to what somebody else said that's completely different and see how those kind of interact with each other. And that's some of the fun in the work that we get to do is seeing how we can gather these sources in a way that'll be meaningful for people.
So did you ever come across, you know, you come across a letter, you come across a story, or even an artifact, and then build a program around that?
I think sometimes, usually it's like a couple of different things.
Okay.
Although I really want to give a shout out to the one letter that Pete shared with me at the end of your program from the Bloody Angle that I feel like, even if it wasn't what sparked your entire program, it is one of those things where like you see that and you're like, okay, we have to talk about this. We have to share this. We have to go.
Probably could make a whole program just about that letter. And long story short, during that program that I was mentioning about, like, we talked about, you know, how the events of the Bloody Angle affected lots of people and the soldiers themselves, their families in different ways. Soldiers who never came home, soldiers who were wounded there and may have never, you know, fully recovered their physical abilities and all. And then there was a letter from a veteran, I think in the early 1900s, to his sister, where he basically lays out a dream that he had. And in very vivid detail, he says that he could recall everything that he did when he was in the Army, down to every member of his company, and moments on the battlefields and after the battles, and seeing his dead comrades lined up for burial and the chaplain there. And he just lays this out to his sister and then just closes the letter. And it's like, clearly he's seeking some type of, you know, input but of course, you know, in the early 20th century or late 19th century, you know, PTSD is not something that is recognized, and it's something, but he's pretty clear to me, at least, he's experiencing some element of that, and he's trying to, like, you know, figure out how to deal with it and all. So this letter is from a Massachusetts soldier who was at Spotsylvania, and just, you know, makes pretty evident, you know, how that battle, how those events affected at least one soldier. How many others are out there that would not write something like that because they were afraid of what would be said, or just you know, didn't feel comfortable writing it because they, you know, now we're going to bring back, you know, unpleasant memories and all. So that letter is, I can't remember how we got it. It's in the park's like archival, you know, like collection of, it's not the original letter, it's a copy of the letter, but came across that and was like, oh my gosh, like, here's something that, right, you know, yeah. And we read that at the Bloody Angle on that program, which I think, like, you were getting to, Ted, is like, you know, it's one thing to have that account or that letter, but using it at the place where the event occurred, and then maybe even more so, like, on the anniversary. So, you know, if you're into that, like 160 years to the date or what have you, that certainly adds another element to it, right? That helps people appreciate things. So,
always so interesting when, and I've seen, you've seen it again, I've seen it from, in a number of programs I've been at where people have come from across the country. Because they, especially at the Bloody Angle, they had relatives who died there, and in a couple of the cases that I've seen, they knew quite a bit, and to be able to come back there, and to hear you all give the programs and be able to, it's got to be a moving experience, and people spare no expense to come here and come back to these parks, which makes it all that much more special.
I spoke to a visitor during the 150th who claimed that she did not pay her mortgage that month so she could come to the anniversary programming that took place during the entire month of May.
Yeah.
So there's some commitment going on there. But yeah, that's where families' histories were changed, people's lives were changed, and folks really want to kind of, you know, take that in. And yeah, there was someone over the anniversary who was telling me about their Confederate ancestor who had been captured at the Mule Shoe on May 12th. And at first they were kind of lamenting, but they were saying, well, you know, I guess he just surrendered. And that's kind of, I was like, well, if, you know, that soldier hadn't surrendered, possible you might not have been here if they would have decided to try to keep fighting to the end or make some other decision. And then you think of how that one little choice, that one little moment in time then had all these implications for 160 years after, right? So that's, I think, sometimes what people get drawn to. And that's kind of what we talked about at our program. Because we're drawn to these things, right? Mm-hmm. But they are horrible events that had these, you know, a lot of times very bad implications. So, like, why are we drawn to these? Well, I think it's that concentration of, you know, a moment that had these huge ripple effects and how that's very interesting to people. And when you think about how that had all these effects on the course of the campaign and the war and history and people's lives and families, and that really kind of makes it, you know, something that folks are wanting to recognize. Yes, the bad stuff is part of that, but hopefully we're not just drawn to the violence or that really, you know, tough kind of stuff. That's certainly worth recognizing. But yeah, we kind of explored that. Otherwise, we just take it for granted. Like, hey, it's cool to go out there and learn these things, you know. But like, let's try to think a little bit more about why we do that or how we go about it.
Right. And you talk about these being, you know, sacred soil and all of that, and you see these families come back and how just deeply connected they are, and it is.
Yeah, well, and I think because it speaks to kind of what Pete's talking about, it is the sort of collective humanity piece, right? And it's honoring the people who made these sacrifices or the people who died or who, you know, made tough choices like surrendering so that they could have, you know, a family and children later on. And thinking about that sort of lasting legacy that is with us, which, you know, is a great lead into things like Memorial Day commemorations, but it also just makes us think about, yeah, like what keeps drawing us back to this, and like the relief worker program that Maddie and Ryan did at the very close of our 160th, where it talks about, okay, so in the face of this kind of horrific violence and this death and all of these horrible things on such an incredible scale, to then have all of these other people who just gave up parts of their lives to just come and follow the armies and provide relief and aid and everything from, you know, helping to bandage wounds to providing jams and flowers and chocolate, you know, the stuff, and just letter writing and just the kind of human comfort that can be provided. And so thinking about, you know, to pull on the like Mr. Rogers look for the helpers thread, that is something that's still with us today, right? Like that common, like in the midst of this horrific thing that is going to shape what our nation can be. I mean, brings about ultimately emancipation, union, a complete transformation of the country into sort of this rebirth come 1865, like huge consequences. But then also you see this glimpse of, okay, how do we react? How do we take care of each other in these kind of moments where, you know, awful things are happening?
Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park this morning. Beth Parnitza and Pete Moggle here this morning. When we come back, the Luminaria. It's if you've never been there, and you should, and we'll talk about it. It's next Saturday night. That'll be next week. Come back on News Talk 1230 WFVA. It is 8:31.
From the Fredericksburg.today online news studios, this is News Talk 1230 WFVA Fredericksburg, a Centennial Broadcasting Station focused on Fredericksburg. This is Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Hear the show anytime by subscribing to the Town Talk podcast on your favorite podcast platform. And now, here's your host, Ted Schubel.
Beth Parnitza and Pete Mogul here from the Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park this morning. May 25th, next Saturday, the Luminaria, and that, I don't know how, it's hard to put into words how to describe what a moving experience that is, but that I know is one of the big highlights of the Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park, and boy, a lot of people come into town for it every year.
Absolutely. It's traditionally our biggest event of the year. As you said, it's sort of unbelievably moving. You know, it's really a powerful scene when you sort of start to walk into the cemetery and you can see the flickering candles and, you know, depending on what time you arrive, whether it's dark or whether it's just getting dark. But then definitely by the time you reach the top of the cemetery and you see the whole cemetery spread out, you can see all of those lives represented by an individual candle. And just you get such a huge scale of a sense of loss. You know, what was the true sacrifice that led us to this, to the point, I guess, not exactly to the point that we're at now, but to this sort of, as we were talking about before the break, like this reforming of our nation, right, into being the United States as it was post-1865, you know, with emancipation, with a union that is reassured to be, you know, true and solid, and the cost in human life of what it truly was, and knowing that our cemetery is just a segment of that loss. You know, we have 15,300 plus soldiers, and in some cases their wives or other people who are affiliated with the military who are buried in the National Cemetery. And again, you get this overwhelming sense of what the loss of life and the sacrifice was that led us to where we are.
Yeah, I would argue that, you know, there's no more fitting place in this country to go on Memorial Day or Memorial Day weekend than the Fredericksburg National Cemetery, because Memorial Day is specifically to observe, you know, those who have died in the service of this country, right? So that cemetery has 15,300 U.S. soldiers who died during a time of war in the service of this country, you know, over 85% of which are unknown. So there's a lot of combat dead up there, or those who died from, you know, wounds in combat. And there's much larger national cemeteries in this country, and I think it's always important to recognize our veterans and those who've fallen, but a lot of other national cemeteries have a lot of veterans who would, you know, die outside of their service. But this Memorial Day holiday and the Fredericksburg National Cemetery is extremely significant in that regard. So also a big shout out to the local scouting community, because when we say, you know, we put this on, we allow hundreds and hundreds of scouts to come and set up this bags. And they work on this for months and months. This process begins like in the winter time, because they have to prepare everything and stage it. And as you might imagine, you know, setting up 15,000, you know, luminary candles is no small task. So they do a lot of the legwork and the physical parts of it. And of course, you know, we help, you know, we coordinate, or we allow it to happen and do our part. But they are the ones that are running a lot of this effort. And those scout leaders and then the scouts themselves, you know, feel the significance of this as well, to kind of reinforce, you know, what is Memorial Day really about, other than getting an extra day off work or having, you know, a picnic or something. It's like, let's remember these fallen in the service of our country. And then sure, with all the stories we have up there, I mean, everybody comes to Luminary for different things. Some folks come and just take it in, spend 10 minutes, and that's fine. That's up to you. Some folks like to, you know, listen to some of the stories that the park rangers tell about the specific soldiers buried there. So that's the thing. It's nice because you have, as Beth said, thousands and thousands of local folks coming in from far away. It's really a unique opportunity on that holiday weekend.
Top of every hour, Taps is played, and as it gets darker and darker, it's so moving. And he moves to a different spot each hour, and it really is something.
Yeah, no, I know some people have asked me, you know, what's the best time to come, and I'm like, you know, you're talking to a devotee here, so I would come at the beginning and I would stay till the end because it looks completely different. The experience is different. If you want to hear all the stories of all the soldiers that we're going to be representing, if you really want to take in Taps, if you want to spend some quiet, reflective time among the graves and see really the full extent of the cemetery, like, you could spend the entire time that we have the cemetery open and the luminaries lit.
It is. And I, which you mentioned, Pete, the fact that 85% are unknown, and boy, you talk about sacrifice and the sacrifice made and not having any recognition, or, you know, no one knows. Boy, that it, that gets you when you see the, all of everything lit at night like that, and know that that so many of these lights. Some of the graves have several people in them, and it's a very moving time, and does put Memorial Day into perspective.
Yeah, I think so too, and I guess that's what we sometimes will tell folks who come to the park and ask about, you know, their great great grandfather who died at the Battle of Fredericksburg, and if we can't find a grave with their name on it, well, then we tell these folks, you know, well, they're buried somewhere up there. And rest assured that, you know, at least once a year on Memorial Day, there's a flag placed at the grave and there's a luminary put there. Now, of course, we honor the graves every day of the year, but that's at a special time. But yeah, as you're getting at, since those unknown soldiers aren't going to have someone coming and you know, visiting their grave specifically because they're unknown, this is, you know, even more impetus on us to make sure that that gets recognized. I think, too, that cemetery just has a very interesting history of how Memorial Day has been observed there in and of itself, which we are going to, I think, try to feature something a little bit different this year, too, like a station about that, how immediately after the Civil War, Memorial Day was established, you know, kind of as an observation. But, you know, the community in Fredericksburg isn't going to go and pay homage to a bunch of Yankees buried up on this hill, right? So the local African-American community in Fredericksburg took it upon themselves to go up to the cemetery and decorate the graves and maybe have a speech or a band play. And then as Union veterans mobilized and raised money, they started coming down here in trains and everything around Memorial Day, like late 19th century.
Yeah.
And then you had the era of like reconciliation when Confederate veterans and Union veterans would hang out. And Confederate veterans asked if they could partake in the Memorial Day observations, and it was agreed with the stipulation. Confederate veterans requested that no black people be present, and Union veterans agreed to that. So the local black community at Fredericksburg was excluded from the observations at the Fredericksburg National Cemetery for some time, while that community was the one that started those observations. So all that is kind of interesting in just how we look at Memorial Day and how we've remembered our veterans. So, sure, something that we sometimes get asked as well is, you know, are there Confederates in this cemetery? What about Confederates remembered on Memorial Day? And, you know, there's a Confederate cemetery in Fredericksburg, and usually Confederate Memorial Day was observed at a different time because there was a distinction between these are U.S. soldiers and the United States Memorial Day, and then Confederacy had its own kind of thing. But all that is very, you know, I think important when we look at how we are where we are now looking at how this holiday that we know it today has been, you know, going on for 160 years, right?
Speaking of which, the luminaria that the gates open was at 8 o'clock on Saturday night, and then eight to eleven, and like you say, Beth, it really everything changes, especially as it just keeps getting darker. And It is the kind of thing that you do want to spend, if you can, a couple of hours just walking around at least.
Yeah, you know, and I'll give a quick shout out on kind of the logistical side of things as well, that we will have golf carts to provide access into the National Cemetery for folks who have any mobility impairments.
Okay.
Because we know that first hill can be really steep, and not all mobility devices can make it up easily. So we'll have the golf carts running to try to provide as much access to the cemetery through the whole night as we can. But yeah, we would encourage folks to come and spend as much or as little time as they'd like. You know, we're glad that folks are coming out to honor and to remember the fallen.
The stories that the different rangers tell at the various spots, and you'll see them because they usually have a lantern or something up to highlight it. Always, everybody has their own little story to tell, and they all really will add to the experience. And you'll walk away learning something you didn't know.
And we learn, that's the thing too. I mean, we find out more every now and then. We'll find out new information about one of the occupants of the graves, and I think that's always, again, like with the anniversary programming, it keeps us on, you know, our toes to come up with new stuff. And yeah, you come out, even if you've come to this for years, you might hear a new story or a story told in a different way. So you can look forward to that type of thing. And yeah, we're going to have our rangers spread throughout the cemetery. You can go at your own pace. I know in the past we've had, like, you had to join a group and you kind of had to do the whole thing. You can talk to, you know, one or two rangers, and you mm-hmm. can do all. I think this year we'll probably have 10 or so. That's up to you, and you can do it on your own, you know, time and everything. There's no tickets or reservations, or you don't have to join any specific groups. But yeah, we got some good ones this year for sure. So I'd encourage you to come and check it out.
Then Monday on Memorial Day, always a special time at the cemetery. And you were telling me off air, it's different this year.
Yeah, so we've decided to take something of a different approach to the actual Monday Memorial Day. So traditionally we've done a formal ceremony with a speaker. We typically try to choose a veteran to speak about, you know, their experience as well as their understanding of, you know, sacrifice. And we thought, you know, as we're kind of reflecting on Memorial Day, right, we find this to be both, it's sort of a collective event where we come together to remember, but it can also be a very individual and intimate thing, you know, as we all have different people who we may be remembering, or there may be, again, the sort of collective sense of fallen U.S. soldiers that we want to remember. And so we thought that instead of doing that very traditional kind of one-off moment, that we would change it up a little bit this year. We're going to start with, so we'll have kind of a program from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. At the National Cemetery. We're going to start with presentation of colors from the 23rd USCT, as we've done for many years now. We'll have the bugler playing taps as well. We may have a wreath laying. And then folks will be welcomed into the National Cemetery, and we'll have some different stations where people can engage again with different stories so that they can learn a little bit about it. We'll have one of our members of our team who is a veteran to speak sort of from a veteran's perspective about the fallen and those that are lost in the service of our country. And then we'll have a station that will allow people to kind of have their individual feelings about Memorial Day explored. So, you know, if there are names of people that you want to write down to remember, we'll have a board where you can, you know, write those names and post them. If you want to write something, sort of your own Memorial Day speech, what would that be, or what would a snippet of that be? And we'll have that opportunity as well. And a few activities to try to engage kids in the meaning of Memorial Day as well. So we're going to have that happening from 10 to 12. And then for the rest of the day, because again, we know that Memorial Day is also a time for people to just come and quietly reflect and walk through the cemetery. We'll have our rangers posted up in the cemetery so that you can have those kind of more individual one-on-one conversations with them throughout the day. So we're trying something different this year, but I think we all feel like it should be a pretty good change. You know, we'll be interested to see how it plays out, but we thought we'd give it a shot. So again, looking for what are some of the best ways to help our community to really walk through the cemetery, experience the cemetery, and remember the fallen that are buried there.
Like you said, Pete, it's more than the day off, mm-hmm. and we've got such good places around here to be able to really celebrate. And whether it's the Luminary on Saturday or the Memorial Day on Monday, there's good options. Memorial Day again, start 10 o'clock is when at the yep. National Cemetery it'll start 10 to 12 with the various stations. The Luminaria is a Saturday night, next Saturday from 8 to 11. Beth Parnitza and Pete Mogul here this morning. We'll take one final break and wrap it up this morning on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
This is Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Download the all-new News Talk 1230 WFVA app for Apple and Android. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio at 540-371-5756. And now, here's your host, Ted Schubel.
Good stuff, as always, with the Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park, Pete Mogul and Beth Parnitza, who you often see out on the field describing a lot of this stuff in here this morning, to talking about it. It is time almost for History at Sunset, one of my favorite times of the year. And these are great programs. They're Saturday nights, kind of smattered throughout the summer. And they really, I'll let you describe it. I mean, you really are able to just go into real detail on certain topics in certain areas.
Yeah, so History at Sunset, which we also enjoy, you know, is one of our opportunities to kind of do deeper dives into things, into specific topics. You know, I think one of the things that our staff really appreciates about our park, and hopefully a lot of our visitors do as well, is we have enough stories to last a lifetime. You know, you can do research on this park, Fredericksburg as a city, the surrounding community area, like you will never run out of material. And History at Sunset is one of those opportunities for us to kind of highlight those stories and share some of the themes that are connected to it, you know, that don't always get play in our day-to-day programming. So yeah, this year we're going to have, we haven't fully announced our schedule. The main thing is that it is kind of a herding cats to get all these special programs lined up and which days and where and all. But, you know, we'll be doing a second Fredericksburg program. We're planning to do a program on prisoners of war at Spotsylvania. We're going to do something about slavery and resistance at Elwood, which I think will be really neat. We recently learned about an enslaved woman who burned down a barn. And, you know, when we talk about acts of resistance, that's a pretty big one.
So, yeah.
Talking about all these sort of different things again. So we're looking at different topics. We're looking at familiar places with different themes, or we're looking at new places in new ways. And yeah, so we are starting off History at Sunset this Saturday with the May 18th program. And then we'll have five more programs. We're going to take about a month off, but then you'll see us every other Saturday starting June 15th through the summer. So yeah, it's one of our main summer programs. We're also, you know, keep an eye on our website. We're about to announce summer hours, summer programs. We're doing a couple new programs this year. We're doing some children's activities. So we're gearing up for what should be another great summer.
And again, for Memorial Day activities, Memorial Day itself, next Monday at the National Cemetery, instead of the usual noon program, you're going to spread that out over a couple of hours starting at 10 o'clock next Monday.
That's right. You know, and again, for folks, we don't expect you to remember all the details. Just check our website for more information on anything, including parking. You know, everything is free, but you know, any of the details that you're looking for, reminders of the dates, everything can be found on our website.
And the Luminary is next Saturday night, the 25th, from 8 to 11. And Pete, you described it really well, that there are a lot of places do things, and all cemeteries are important. But boy, this one with so many there, and with so many unknown, when you look at all of those candles representing, you know, many that are unknown at that cemetery, makes it just even more special on that night.
Oh yeah, no, we definitely think that, and then each one has their own story and how that, you know, was felt across the entire nation. But yeah, soldiers who died in the service of their country, that cemetery is filled with them, and mostly combat dead, which I think makes it unique in that regard. I mean, don't get me wrong, visit any national cemetery you can on Memorial Day weekend, but ours, I think, has that special kind of significance to it. So,
and weather's always an issue. If there's a problem, usually your Facebook page will have all kinds of information and updates on what is happening with the Luminaria, if there are problems next Saturday night.
Yeah. Send us, listeners, send us good vibes for good weather.
Oh, please. We've had so many weekends where there is rain that we're due for a good one. And hopefully, I'm sure it makes your life a lot easier on that day if it's sunny in the morning and it's going to be sunny all weekend long, that you don't even have to think about it.
Certainly. There is a rain date. If we would typically call the event pretty early that day on Saturday morning. We would then postpone it to Sunday, the 26th. But if we don't make the call early that morning, it's pretty likely we're going to go through with it, you know, that day. We try not to make last-minute calls or cancellations and all. So, like, as Beth said, you know, check our social media, and we'll put any updates on there. But the rain date is on Sunday. If it does, like, that's a wash on Saturday. We do not have a second rain date. So,
yeah.
If it rains both days, then unfortunately...
That's it.
Yes.
Pete Mogul and Beth Parnitz of Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park, thanks for what you've done all the month of May. They've been just really terrific programs all along, and we'll talk again soon. Thanks.
Great. Thanks so much, Ted.
Thanks, Ted.
That is it. Thank you for listening. We'll see you in the morning.
Thanks for listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. The views expressed by the host and guests on this program are their own and not necessarily those of this station, its management, or Centennial Broadcasting. Hear the show anytime by subscribing to the Town Talk podcast on your favorite podcast platform. The Glenn Beck program is next on News Talk 1230 WFVA, focused on Fredericksburg.